Peter! It is with deepest pride and greatest pleasure that I welcome you here tonight. And now, we invite you to relax, go and pull up a chair, as Filmbook proudly presents the Animation Podcast. Yes, my name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animad from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Look Back and Animes Reviews. If this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just say, be our guest, but I'm not going to be singing the whole way through because this is a podcast. This is not necessarily listening to me singing, unless you really want that. I think I do have a few videos on my YouTube channel where it's just me singing, but anyways, what this is supposed to be, it's not me singing, it's about the latest news that happened this week. So, for starters, on this episode, we are going to be looking into Oriental DreamWorks and how there's a lot of bad signs going on that DreamWorks is going to be downsizing once more. Then afterwards, there is another DreamWorks story, but this time, maybe it could shed a little bit of light to the company, considering that we finally got the trailer of Captain Underpants. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the live-action reboot of Mulan, where maybe it won't have any songs, but we know that there will be a lot of kung fu action. Then afterwards, we will be looking into another trailer, this time being the live-action American remake of Death Note. And finally, we got Matt's Pick of the Week. Or, actually, I do have a little bit of an announcement about that once we get into it, but stay tuned. If you want to check out more episodes of the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, that is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. All right, so our first story that we have for you today, like I said before, it's going to be a little bit of bad news regarding DreamWorks Animation. Now, as you guys may know, ever since Comcast has purchased DreamWorks, things do not seem to be looking as great as it seems. Because with the whole purchase from Comcast, it's supposed to be something that would sustain DreamWorks Animation. It should keep them alive from going anywhere lower to ultimately death. Like, that's the one thing we're at least hoping that Comcast would do. But this may not be the case, however. Lately, we are seeing a whole bunch of layoffs on top of even some projects that had to be let go. You guys may know that The Croods 2 and recently Larrikins had to ultimately be dropped. And now DreamWorks Animation has absolutely nothing to release in 2018. So that is a little bit worrisome. But on top of that, they did have to take away some of their external venues as well. And it looks like they are in discussions about getting rid of one of theirs, possibly. And I'm talking, of course, about Oriental DreamWorks. Now, my source here from Variety, it has stated that the sources say that Comcast is in talks with Oriental DreamWorks Chinese backers, including China Media Capital and Shanghai Alliance Investment Limited, about possibly giving up DreamWorks Animation's 45% stake in the venture. If that happens, it would mark the end of one of the highest profile link-ups between Hollywood and China. So ultimately, what Comcast is discussing with the backers is trying to restructure Oriental DreamWorks, that it could possibly be that it would no longer be associated with DreamWorks Animation. Now, some of you might be wondering, what is Oriental DreamWorks and why is it such a big deal that DreamWorks Animation in general, they could possibly lose that? Well, you see, the whole thing with Oriental DreamWorks is that it's not just supposed to be an extension of DreamWorks Animation so that there would be other people making animated features for them. You know, like, it's not just that. It's also an attempt for DreamWorks Animation to go off and try to really capitalize on the Chinese market, because when it comes to movies, China can profit as much money or even more than in North America. Believe me, there are a lot of movies out there that really made their money just through China alone. It's not just in North America, in the domestic box office, where they can manage to go and really profit up the money. You know what I mean? So it's not just in there. So with that said, though, with Oriental DreamWorks, they're hoping that they can go and create animated features not to be more accustomed to American audiences and for audiences around the world, but especially movies that could even be tailored for Chinese audiences. And their first, and so far the only animated feature that they have crafted in that sense, is actually Kung Fu Panda 3, which, even though it did make a lot of money at the box office, and it is pretty successful, it's not as successful as DreamWorks and the Chinese backers would really want it. You know, it's not necessarily one of their most highest grossing animated features that they have crafted. I'm not even 100% sure if it even made as much as either the like Kung Fu Panda or Kung Fu Panda 2. I'm sure it made more money than Kung Fu Panda 1, but I'm not 100% sure if it even went off to make more than Kung Fu Panda 2. In fact, I'm just going to go to Box Office Mojo just to double check on that. So if you guys can give me a little second right here, or at least if it can frickin' load up, at least, okay, there we go. So it's still loading. Hold on a sec, man. I know it's kind of like one of the disadvantages of me trying to improvise a little bit in my research for the animation podcast is that sometimes my computer might not necessarily want to cooperate. Okay, there we go. So I just want to check up on it. Okay, so for God's sakes. Okay. There. All right. Got it. Right here. So, yeah. Just want to double check on it. The first Kung Fu Panda film, it made $630 million at the box office. The second one made $665 million. And the third one, oh, okay. So, oh, it's the least successful. Never mind. So, yeah, Kung Fu Panda 3 made only more than $520 million. So, okay, yeah, never mind. Okay, I can see why they're a little bit disappointed considering that it is not as successful as they were hoping for. Okay, but anyway, sorry about that. Going back into the subject of Oriental DreamWorks, yeah, like at their peak, like when business was really booming, Oriental DreamWorks had a grand total of 250 staff members in 2014. But then, and like, at least this was, like, a great upgrade considering that the company Oriental DreamWorks began in 2012. But nowadays, like, it really is under there. Like, now they've, like, notched down to two digits where they only made less than, where they only have 100 staff members. And there are a lot of them that are pretty much handing over their portfolios to other animation studios just to at least have a job. They're even unsure if they could even stay at Oriental DreamWorks or if Oriental DreamWorks is still gonna be there. But on top of mainly creating Kung Fu Panda 3, Oriental DreamWorks also did help out on many of the other DreamWorks animated features just to, you know, just to be involved with the production on it, including films such as Penguins of Madagascar, How to Train Your Dragon 2, and Home. And currently, they are in production of creating their second entire animated feature, this time being Everest, which is the original animated feature where a bunch of kids would find this Yeti in the Himalayas, and they would go bring it back home. And so far, that movie is set to be scheduled in September of 2019. But with this entire news about, like, the possible restructuring of Oriental DreamWorks, who knows what could possibly happen? And yeah, I could definitely see how this is a pretty bad sign for DreamWorks Animation in general. Because if they lose Oriental DreamWorks, then this is another big sign that they're just gonna go, like completely downsized to where they might only have Glendale. I mean, sure, like they are, like DreamWorks Animation is currently looking for other places to go and work on their movies and stuff like that. Like, for example, for Captain Underpants, it is outsourced by an animation studio in Montreal, Canada. But, you know, they don't have, like, a main place where they can go and outsource their work. Like, it's, like, technically that studio that made Captain Underpants is not immediately under the association of DreamWorks Animation. It's not a DreamWorks company. Like, Oriental DreamWorks, that is something from DreamWorks where they would make animated features for DreamWorks. But if the restructuring goes through and Comcast decided to take away that 45% stake, then they might lose that. Now, the thing is, though, is that Oriental DreamWorks is not going to shut down. They're just going to turn into something else entirely. But I can also see the consequences on that as well, even though maybe some people are not going to necessarily lose their jobs, like it's still going to be a functioning animation studio. There is still the factor of Everest. And that's another part that worries about that I am worried about, is that technically maybe Everest is not going to shut down, but DreamWorks is still going to lose an animated film. And if there's one thing that DreamWorks cannot afford at this point, is losing another animated feature. They already lost two in a matter of months. They cannot afford to lose another one. And even if they did lose out on Everest, then they really don't have much left. Like, the only thing that they have in their schedule are the animated films of this year, including The Boss Baby, Just Around the Corner, and also, what else? They got Captain Underpants. And then after that, they got How to Train Your Dragon 3, which so far, it's the only animated film in the DreamWorks lineup that I see is getting a lot of hype and anticipation. And also Trolls 2. And you can debate maybe Shrek 5, but that one doesn't necessarily have an official release date. We don't know what's going on. And neither is Edgar Wright's Shadows. We don't, like, that one, we don't necessarily know what's going on either. So there are two of which that are in development that don't have an official release date yet. But yeah, it is a little bit worrisome with what's going on at DreamWorks. I mean, the fact that they are continuously downsizing like this is, you know, it's exactly like what I said when I talked about DreamWorks canceling Larrikins. It's another worrisome sign that would bring up the fear of, like, what would be Comcast's ultimate goal with DreamWorks? Do they want them as an animation studio, or do they just want to ultimately cut them down to the point that they're only useful just for having the brands and that's it? I mean, I don't know what's going on, and honestly, for me personally, I feel like it would be best if they can at least keep Oriental DreamWorks up until they can at least make Everest so that they can see if it's going to be a hit, if it's going to be worthwhile or not. I don't know what's going to be going on with it, but like, just at least hold on to it until they can release that movie, and then you can fully know what to do with Oriental DreamWorks, if you want to keep it or you just want to let it go. Like, just give it a chance just for the sake of maintaining DreamWorks Animation as an animation studio as much as you can. But other than that, this is just another worrisome sign that this could be the fall of DreamWorks Animation. But I don't know, maybe that's just paranoia talking, maybe that's just a little bit of a fear, but who knows what's going to happen with DreamWorks. But yeah, all I could say about this is that this is possibly not a good sign. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we got possibly the most anticipated trailer, because my god, this was long overdue. I mean, for the longest time, all we have gotten was just little promotional pieces. We got posters, we got a picture, but we got nothing in terms of little clips like teaser trailers or a full trailer or anything like that. So this absolutely was long overdue. And this is actually something that really did intrigue a lot of people, including myself, to see what DreamWorks would actually do with this. But considering that the Boss Baby is around the corner and this trailer would most likely appear before the Boss Baby, it's about time that we have finally got it. So yes, ladies and gentlemen, we have finally received the trailer of Captain Underpants, the first movie. Finally, we have gotten it. Now, for those of you who don't know, Captain Underpants, of course, is based on the ever-popular kids' books by Dave Pickley. And I just want to say right now, when I was a kid, Captain Underpants was my jam. I kid you not. I actually still have the books with me. I haven't read all of them. I've only went up to maybe like the 6th or the 7th one. The last I checked was that I don't know if it's either the 8th one or if it's the 7th one, but it ended up with George and Harold and a pterodactyl suddenly being transported or teleported or in a time machine or something like that. Maybe someone can comment which one it ended off. I kind of stopped right there. But yeah, this is just to say that I loved reading Captain Underpants when I was a kid. Like, they were an awesome and hilarious series of books. And it is actually pretty interesting to hear that DreamWorks would actually want to turn this into a feature film. And so, what we got in the trailer right over here is that it does look like it's going to stay more true to the first book, where we see the origin of how George and Harold, that they would often get in trouble in school, and then they suddenly decide they're going to go hypnotize their principal and turn him into one of the characters that they decided to create in comic form known as Captain Underpants. And then afterwards, it looks like it's going to be combining elements from the first 4 books, where you do have the talking toilet, and also Professor Poopy Pants is going to be prominent in here, and he could actually be the main villain in this picture. And from what I've seen right over here, I'm going to be very honest with you guys. As a Captain Underpants fan and also as an animation critic, I can either see this really work out tremendously, or it can also fail miserably. Because here's my thing. I can definitely see the effort that's put into it. I definitely do like a lot of the things that I do see. Like, for one, the humor, yeah, it's silly, it's immature, but so is the comic. But so are the books. Like, it definitely does stay true to the tone of it, where it's not going to be really taking itself seriously. And I mean, on a movie called Captain Underpants, there's no way that you can really take it seriously. Like, you cannot make this into, like, Batman versus Superman Dawn of Justice. Unless you want to try to parody, like, the ending, just, like, have Captain Underpants or just George and Harold just go out, "Save Martha!" You know, just something like that. I don't know. But, yeah, like, it definitely has the tone of humor. And, like, there are some funny moments. I'm not going to say, like, laugh-out-loud moments like I had with the Despicable Me 3 trailers, but I can definitely see that it does have some funny moments, and, yeah, the tone stays true to the books. But also, another element that really does stay true to the books is actually the animation. Just by looking at it, it really does stay true to the illustrations from Dave Pickley. Or, wait, is it Dave Pickley? Pilkey, sorry about that. Yeah, Dave Pilkey. And, wait, is Dave Pilkey also the guy who did the illustrations, or is he just the writer of it? Or maybe he did both. I tried checking if the illustrations were done by someone else, but maybe it's actually done by Dave. But anyways, yeah, the animation, it definitely does stay true to the simplistic style that the books originally offered, so it can have a little bit of that Peanuts movie vibe in there, except the only difference between the Peanuts movie and Captain Underpants is that in Captain Underpants, the animation is much more fluid. It's not like taking away a few frames or trying to be reminiscent to classic cartoons or stuff like that. No, the animation here is a lot more fluid with what they want to do. And it does make sense that they want to go into the cartoony route. I'm hoping that it's not going to go too much into the cartoony route, but yeah, it does make sense with the style that it has, and especially with the tone, that they want to do something that's a little bit more rubbery and a little bit cartoony at the same time. And, you know, there are some moments that it can work out well. And plus the fact that, like, we're not getting a lot from here. Like, I've read that apparently in Captain Underpants, what's going to happen is that we're going to get a lot more different styles. Like, there's going to be a few points where we're going to see some 2D animation at the same time. And especially with all the different villains that they would have, and plus the fact that we do have like little sneak peeks of other villains like Professor Poopy Pants, the Talking Toilet, and also Melvin is in here at the same time, we could be seeing some creative gadgetry or how they're going to adapt like all those crazy machines from the original books and turn it into computer animation. So maybe there could be a lot more in the computer animation that we're not seeing in here. But yeah, so far I would say that those are the good things that we have. But here is also the part of me that is a little bit worried with what's going to happen with it. Like, what would be the worst case scenario? Well, from what I can tell, number one is that I could definitely have that, like, I sense that there is a little bit of a cliched story that's going on. Like, in terms of the plot, it could be a little bit similar to something like E.T. or The Iron Giant, where you have a bunch of kids that discover this supernatural being who is also the titular character. And I guess the one thing that's supernatural about Captain Underpants is the level of intelligence. you got a bunch of kids that have this supernatural being, and they're hoping, you know, they're trying to, you know, take him away from, like, hide him from society, unless, like, people find out, because, like, this kind of thing would not survive in the outside world. So it might have a little bit of a cliched, predictable plot that's going on. But also, I am a little bit worried about the animation at the same time. Like I said, I understand why they want to go into the cartoony route with this, considering the utterly silly tone of the books and also the art style itself, considering how it decided to stay very true to the original books. And I really am glad with it, at least. Like, you know, they could have done a lot worse with it, where their eyes could be a little bit more realistic, where they would add pupils and stuff like that just to make him look a little bit gross. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of animated films really do desperately try to add in pupils to add more, like, of a realistic sense to it, and it just really doesn't work out. But even though it's trying to go cartoony, I'm hoping that it's not really focusing on trying to be too cartoony. Like, if it wants to be more like those other cartoony animated films, like the recent Ice Age sequels or Hotel Transylvania, where it doesn't care about the writing itself, and it rather wants to do silly jokes through utterly goofy, over-the-top animation. Or worst-case scenario, it might end up being like Food Fight or the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs films, where it's basically gone to the point where it has no care about the writing whatsoever. It's already garbage, and they're trying so desperately hard to be so over the top with its animation, where it's going to look like the filmmakers are just a bunch of idiots that have no idea what they're doing, with no comprehension on how animation works in the first place. But again, that would be worst case scenario. And it doesn't look like the Captain Underpants trailer is showing that it's going to be too over the top with it. I don't know. But also, I just want to add one more thing that it is a little bit bothersome for me. And that is actually with the cast. Okay, so I think no matter what, like, if you have at least seen the trailer, you don't have to watch, you don't have to read the books and stuff like that. If you have seen the trailer, I think we can all agree that George and Harold are kids, right? They're kids in elementary school. They're like in the fourth grade or like third or fourth grade, somewhere around that level. Who the fridge thought it was a great idea to bring in Kevin Hart and Thomas Middleditch to voice George and Harold, on top of having, like, other kids, like Melvin, being voiced by Jordan Peele? Like, seriously? I'm not saying they're bad actors. You know, like, even in the trailer, they do deliver a pretty good performance. But they're just too old! They're not kids, for God's sakes! Like, they're supposed to play, like, just a fraction of their freaking age, and it's unconvincing whatsoever. Like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, I don't know. Like, the thing is that they also have Ed Helms, who's going to play, Professor Crump. Yeah, he's going to play, Mr. Crump and Captain Underpants. And, like, the kids sound like they're in the exact same age as the freaking principal. Are you kidding me? Like, why do you do this? I understand that this is DreamWorks Animation, and most of the time, they really want to bring in A-list celebrities and recognizable names to be voice acting in their films, not only for their performance, but also for promotional purposes. Like, hey, check it out. We actually got, the director of Get Out, and we got Kevin Hart, and we got Ed Helms in this movie doing voices for freaking Captain Underpants. I get that, but still, man, it's supposed to be kids. Why the fridge are you getting adults to do the voices when they're not even trying to sound like kids? I don't know, man. It's just freaking ridiculous. I mean, this would be the equivalent if in Pixar's Coco, the main kid, like the main character Miguel, would end up being voiced by George Lopez. It would be the same thing. Well, it's like, why would you do that, man? Like, if you're gonna have kids, let them be voiced by kids. Go and audition kids, for God's sakes. I know it's going to be a lot more trouble than it is just hiring big name celebrities, but still, man, you need that authenticity to at least let us know that these kids are kids. And it's not just freaking Mini Kevin and Mini Thomas, you know? It's honestly just a ridiculous thing, and it is frequently happening in animated films. I don't know why this is a trend where kids cannot just be voiced by kids. It's utterly ridiculous. But yeah, other than that, I would say that overall, I do have some mixed feelings about it. I can see where it can really work. I can see where it can possibly fail. It can go in either direction. But for me personally, both as an animation critic and also as a Captain Underpants fan, I'm still going to stay optimistic about this. I'm going to hope for the best for this movie. Like, not just for the film itself, but also for DreamWorks Animation, and also for 2017, just to, you know, just to have some of the good to wash off some of the terrible that we're going to get, like with Nutjob 2 and the Emoji Movie, so that at least we could say, yeah, we got those garbage films, but at least we got stuff like the Lego Batman movie and Captain Underpants. So I'm gonna hope for the best on this movie, and if you guys are excited to go see this film, then Captain Underpants will be coming out with his first ever movie on, I believe, this June. Is it June? Yeah, it's actually in June. Okay, so for our next story, we're going to be jumping from animated films now to live action, considering that people are still in the mood of live action reboots nowadays, especially with Beauty and the Beast fresh in theaters, and everybody's decided to go and check that out. This time we're going to look into one of Disney's upcoming live action reboots, this time being Mulan. And the director, Nicky Caro, has been in some interviews explaining a little bit more of what's going to be going on with Mulan. So I have my source here on Entertainment Weekly, and it actually did state, she actually mentioned a little bit about Mulan that I haven't started yet, so I can't give you any real details, But the budget and the location and the story are offering such scope for to me for an incredible muscular piece of girly martial arts extravaganza in China, and I can't wait. I've got my little girl, she's 9. We're going to start learning mixed martial arts in preparation. Okay, so it's actually pretty nice. So we are getting the promise that the live-action reboot of Mulan is going to be filled with girls doing a lot of martial arts action. So that's actually pretty cool. But there could be a little bit of a sacrifice to it. There could be a part of it that we might not be getting, and that's actually with the songs, where in another interview, Nikki Caro also stated, from what I understand, no songs right now, much to the horror of my children. So yeah, even though we are getting a lot of martial arts action, we might not be getting many of the recognizable songs from Mulan. So we might not hear Reflections. We're not gonna hear Bring Honor to Us All. We're not gonna hear what else is there? A Girl Worth Fighting For, and we might not hear I'll Make a Man Out of You. So those are the only things that we know about it so far. And they didn't necessarily start production yet. They didn't start filming on the movie. We know that there is a release date, and it is actually going to be released pretty soon by the end of next year. But yeah, so far that's just a little piece of info that we're getting so far with the live-action reboot of Mulan. Maybe we're going to get more information once D23 Expo is going to be coming out, but we just have to wait and see. But anyways, going into the aspect of Mulan, you know, it is a little bit of a mix, but honestly, I feel like this could be a little bit more of good news in a way, and that's especially with the martial arts, that we are going to be getting a lot more action. And that is technically one of the most praised things about Mulan. Not necessarily, I don't just mean the movie, actually. I mean more just the character of Mulan, where she is regarded as one of the strongest characters in the Disney princess lineup, because she's more about kicking butt and trying to go out and fight the Huns than it is than just to be a princess. And plus the fact that we can even debate if, even in the Mulan movie, that there is elements of romance, like with Shan Yu. We're not even 100% sure. Like, many people can even interpret that at the end, Mulan and Shan Yu just want to be friends, and that's it, you know? Nothing special, just, you know, be buds and be, like, partners just to go and fight against the Huns, just like that. So, yeah, like, the promise of getting some great martial arts, that's going to be pretty cool. And it's also going to be greatly reminiscent to a lot of Chinese kung fu movies. It's actually pretty coincidental considering that Bill Kong will be an executive producer. And this is also the guy who worked on Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. So who knows what could end up happening in here. So yeah, like, okay, it's great that we do have a lot of the promise of Mulan and maybe some other girls kicking butt. But then we do have the aspects of the songs. And in that front, I can understand that there could be a lot of people who are going to be highly disappointed with the fact that many of the memorable songs from Mulan are not going to be there. That I can understand. It's not necessarily with many of them, it's not that Mulan is highly recognized as, like, a Disney musical. It's more the factor of the one song that everybody remembers from this movie. And that is I'll Make a Man Out of You. Because I do get a feeling that people won't mind that if there's not going to be songs like Reflection or A Girl Worth Fighting For that's going to be present in the live-action remake. But I'll Make a Man Out of You is one of the first things that people think of when it comes to Mulan, actually. So, like, what I'm asking at the very least from it is that,
okay, maybe this could sound a little bit like fan service or something like that. Not necessarily do something like the live action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, where you just make it into a flat out musical, but just maybe do something like The Jungle Book, where it's not necessarily a musical, but it does have some musical moments where they do bring up some of the songs like Bare Necessities and I Wanna Be Like You, where in here, like in Mulan, what they could do is have maybe a little bit of reflection and maybe have some of I'll Make a Man Out of You. But especially the fact that, considering that this is going to be a martial arts movie, like there's going to be at one point where there's going to be a montage scene. Like, the montage scene is going to be unavoidable. Even if you don't put in the lyrics, at least have an instrumental of I'll Make a Man Out of You just as a little homage to the animated feature. That, I would actually leave the movie happy if it at least has that. You know, just have a montage scene, put in an awesome instrumental of I'll Make a Man Out of You, and you're going to make a lot of people happy. Now, I know that maybe it could be possible that, they will bring up some of the songs, not necessarily in the movie, but more for the end credits, where you're going to have a popular singer just singing Reflections or I'll Make a Man Out of You just for soundtrack purposes. But who knows what they can do with it? At least just bring it up a little bit. Not make it a musical, but just bring the songs a little bit, just, you know, just to at least satisfy the Disney fans and fans of the original animated feature. But yeah, there could be a chance that the live-action Mulan movie could be heading into the right direction. And if you guys are actually pretty excited to go see the movie, then all you have to do is wait until the film will be coming out on November 2nd, 2018. Okay, so for our next story, we got another trailer for you guys, this time being a live action feature. Yeah, like, I just noticed that we are going into a little bit of, kind of a smooth transition after each story, where we started out with DreamWorks, and then we move on to a DreamWorks movie with Captain Underpants, and then we transition to a Disney live action reboot based on an animated film, and now we're moving on to a trailer that is a live action reboot that's based on an animated property. I just realized that now. I just had an epiphany on it. I was like, oh my god. Like, I didn't even did that on purpose. Oh wow. Okay, but anyways, going back to what I was talking about, Netflix has released the trailer of the live action American remake of Death Note. And so far, we only got a teaser trailer. This doesn't necessarily say anything of what this movie is going to be about. All we have seen so far is just the Death Note falling down, and we see the kid that is supposed to be Light. He picks up the book and he wants to go and try it out, and then we got little hints of action going on, like rather be like Light killing off people with the Death Note or running away from the cops and all that kind of stuff. And also, like, we do get a little taste of some of the other characters as well. Like, we do have a small taste of Misa. We have a small taste of L. And we do have, of course, a small taste of Willem Dafoe as Ryuk, which I'm already seeing online that people are just making fun of that fact that we got Willem Dafoe that's not necessarily trying to be Ryuk. He's just trying to be Willem Dafoe. And they're already predicting that some of the next lines that some of the most memorable lines that Ryuk could actually say would scream out, "We'll meet again, Spider-Man!" No, but it's pretty funny. But yeah, we don't necessarily get a lot out of this trailer. This is just a small taste of what we could possibly get. Now, already there are some people who are mad about this Death Note remake, and already they're calling out whitewashing. Considering the fact that this, that it's not going to be completely accurate to the anime itself, considering that, from what I understand, this version of Death Note will be set in the US, and they did hire some Caucasian actors to play some of the characters like Light and also Misa and presumably a few other characters as well. Like, already you got some people calling out whitewashing, and they're planning to go and boycott this movie. Oh, I'm not gonna watch this movie, it's not as authentic. They didn't hire Japanese actors to play as the characters, so this is absolutely Hollywood trying to whitewash and... I don't care of that bullcrap. I mean, like, basically these anime fans are already calling out whitewashing. They're going to be doing it so many times now, considering that there are going to be so many live-action reboots of animes that are going to be coming in, especially that, like, they already did it so many times to the upcoming Ghost in the Shell live-action reboot. Now they're going to be doing this as well, so there might be many other times that they're just going to call out whitewashing. And I think Andrew Dickman on Twitter, he actually said it best, that now anime fans know exactly how Disney fans feel about all these live-action reboots coming out. And it's actually very true. Like, yeah, you feel like these live-action reboots of your favorite animes are very unnecessary? Yeah, well, so is Beauty and the Beast. So is Maleficent. So is Cinderella. So is Alice in Wonderland. Maybe Jungle Book, but that movie is actually pretty good. But yeah, like, yeah, so anime fans, welcome to our world. No, but anyways, going into Death Note, I'm not going to call out whitewashing on it. The one thing that I am worried about it, though, is that I am a bit afraid if they're going to take this Death Note and they're just going to completely Americanize it, where it's going to end up exactly like the live-action reboot of Beauty and the Beast, where it's just going to be the shell of the original Death Note, where we're going to recognize elements of Death Note, where they're going to have the characters, and it's going to have the same story, and it could actually be adapted well. But what I'm worried about is that it's not going to have all the elements that really made Death Note the phenomenon that it is nowadays. Why the anime and the manga is so beloved, you know? It's not going to have any of that, and it might end up focusing just on the action, and the characters are going to be pretty downplayed, and I don't know, who knows? And it's really going to be tough to really, like, bring these characters to life. Like, these actors, they do have a pretty hard job of trying to create new versions of, like, already beloved characters. Rather it be, like, with Light, rather it be with Misa, rather it be with L, and even Willem Dafoe, like, he's gonna have a hard time trying to make a convincing Ryuk, where people are not going to see Willem Dafoe, but they're going to see the new version of Ryuk. That is going to be a little tricky, so who knows what's going to happen with it. But that's the one thing that I'm worried about, is that we might end up with an inferior product, and, like, we might as well end up just sticking with the original manga or the anime, and I don't know. I don't necessarily have good feelings about this, the funny thing is, though, is that technically we don't necessarily need this movie, and especially for all those people, like, who whine and complain about whitewashing in this, is that technically, if you guys are really if you guys are desperately in need to have Japanese actors, then go and watch the live-action Japanese movies. There's already four of them, in fact. You got the three main movies. I think you got the trilogy of movies, and you got an L spin-off film. So you can go and check that out. But other than that, yeah, I don't know what's going to be going on with this Death Note. But in terms of the story itself, like, I can imagine that this is just going to be the first part. Like, there's no way that they're going to put in the entire story of Death Note into this one film. Like, this is just going to be a part one that I can imagine Netflix is going to be turning into an entire film franchise or a trilogy. Like, from what I can imagine with this Death Note trailer, is that from what it's showing, is that we're only going to be getting the first part all the way up to when Light decided to wipe away his entire memory from what he did with the Death Note because of, like, his entire elaborate plan. Like, you guys understand if you've seen the anime. And then Light will end up ultimately be working with the FBI in order to go and capture Kira. Like, that I can definitely sense from the trailer of this movie. But who knows how this is going to end up being. And if you guys are actually curious to see how the American Death Note is going to turn out, then all you have to do is just wait until it actually comes out on Netflix on August 25th. And so finally, we now have Matt's Pick of the Week. But actually, I do have a little bit of an announcement, just like what I said in the beginning, about the Matt's Pick of the Week, is that I did think a little bit about it, and I want to try to change it up a little bit. I don't think I will be calling it Matt's Pick of the Week anymore. Like, the official last Matt's Pick of the Week will be from the previous episode. So now, I decided to change things up a bit, and now I'm going to be calling it Animat's Pick of the Week. What's going to be the difference? Three letters, A-N-I, before Matt's Pick of the Week. So yeah, that's the only difference. I know it's really not that much, and maybe I am probably putting in false anticipation, but yeah, I just decided to change the title from Matt's Pick of the Week to Animat's Pick of the Week, just to be more associated with my YouTube channel and my persona as Animat. Why not? Just go and stick with that. Okay, but anyways, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Animat's Pick of the Week. And today, what we got for you today is going to be a story that I'm sure you guys are familiar with. Like, this is the same old song and dance routine that we have been through before. But there is a little bit of an interesting twist to it. A little bit more evidence. And the person is actually a little bit recognizable. Now, the thing is that there is somebody out there who is trying to sue Disney for stealing his idea for Zootopia. Yes, we are going into one of those stories, and I'm sure this is not the first time that I've covered a story like this. And I know, this is the same old song and dance routine. Like, Disney goes through these things all the freaking time with all their successful animated features. But this time, the person who is suing them and claiming that Disney stole his idea is actually a pretty recognizable name. It is actually Gary Goldman. And by the way, no guys, don't worry. This is not the same Gary Goldman that is Don Bluth's animation partner. No, it's not that Gary Goldman. The Gary Goldman that I am talking about here is actually the writer of films such as Total Recall and Big Trouble in Little China. So yeah, this is the writer Gary Goldman, not the animator Gary Goldman. But back to what I was saying. So it has stated right here, I'm using my source in Variety, just paraphrasing, that apparently Gary Goldman has claimed that, like, almost every element of Zootopia was stolen from his original idea that he pitched twice to Disney in 2000 and in 2009. Like, they stole a lot of stuff. Not necessarily just the concept of it, but also the story, the message that it has of anti-discrimination, and, you know, talking about how society works and stuff like that. But also, even the title, they stole it. It has stated from a representative of Gary Goldman stating, although the Walt Disney Company rigorously enforces its copyrights, it has developed a culture that is not only accepts the unauthorized copying of others' original material, but encourages it. Instead of lawfully acquiring Goldman's work, defendants said that they were not interested in producing it and sent him on his way. Thereafter, consistent with their culture of unauthorized copying, defendants copied Goldman's work. So they're pretty much saying that Disney pretty much copies others' work in order to make massive profits of it. So that's already a big allegation right there. That's already a big claim. But some of you might be wondering, okay, so if Gary Goldman claims that Zootopia was all his idea, then what is his idea all about? So I'm going to read directly from my source here on Variety, stating, Goldman alleges that he registered a treatment for a live-action film called Looney with the Writers Guild of America West in August 2000. According to the suit, Looney was to be the first installment in a Zootopia franchise that would also include an animated Zootopia. So yeah, like, he even thought up of the title of Zootopia, apparently. Goldman's concept includes a human animator who creates a cartoon animal world meant to reflect a complex human society. According to Goldman, the society includes class and power structures based on the characteristics of different species. But on top of that, it looks like that there are even a lot of characters that they end up copying. Like, we actually do have a row of characters that apparently are Goldman Zootopia characters and a lot of Disney Zootopia characters that are very similar. Like, you do have the main character in Goldman Zootopia that is this cute little optimistic squirrel that is being discriminated that is very similar to Judy Hopps. Or you got this very cynical hyena that is very similar to Nick Wilde. Or you even have a sloth character that is similar to Flash. Or you got this big, brooding, like, boss-like bear that is similar to Chief Bogo. Or you even got, like, this seductive, sexual cheetah that is very reminiscent to Gazelle. And the list goes on. There's even, like, this, like, pissed-off koala that is very similar to Finnick, in a way. And on top of that, like, it doesn't end there. It's not just very similar characters, very similar concept, very similar story, and even, like, the same title, but even the same lines as well. He even accused Disney of taking some of the same lines from, like pretty much taking the lines from his original script and put it into the Zootopia movie. Like, Goldman is pretty much saying that he's the one who thought up of the idea of the line, if you want to be an elephant, then go be an elephant. And the rest of the article from this Variety page, it's pretty much explaining more about the plot of his Zootopia. But on top of that, Disney also claimed, oh, there's also a little piece of information right over here. In 2007, Goldman says he was hired to write a screenplay for Blaze, a Marvel project. For that film, he says he worked with Brigham Taylor, who was Disney's executive vice president of production and development. According to the suit, Goldman pitched Taylor on the Zootopia project in 2009. Goldman said that Taylor said he would show the material to Disney's animation department, but later passed on acquiring the rights to the project. But Disney did take notice, and he did state that they're not going to go down without a fight. And Disney stated that Mr. Goldman's lawsuit is riddled with patently false allegations. It is an unprincipled attempt to lay claim to a successful film he didn't create, and we will vigorously defend against it in court. So yeah, there's this big battle going on with writer Gary Goldman versus Disney for who claims the title of owning the original idea of Zootopia. And they're honestly, this is following a little bit of the same steps as, like, all the other lawsuit stories that I've heard about. And one thing that, like, it pisses me off about this entire lawsuit is honestly the timing of this. It has to be now that Gary Goldman has to put up a lawsuit against Disney on Zootopia. Yeah, right after Zootopia made all of its money at the box office, where it made $1 billion at the box office, the fourth ever animated feature to do so, and it managed to get all of these awards, including several Annie Awards, and even the Oscar for Best Animated Feature. Yeah, you cannot wait until, like you cannot wait, like, you can't go out and sue them while Zootopia is in the middle of production. You cannot sue them when, you cannot sue them when the movie was freshly out in theaters. No, you gotta wait for this moment. When Disney got all of its trophies and riches, so until then, it's the right time to go and strike at Disney. Like, you realize how bullcrap that this totally sounds, and how it ends up making Gary Goldman like he's just pulling off this get-rich-quick scheme to capitalize on Zootopia success. It really is so stupid. And on top of that, we have already developed this entire story of how Zootopia was actually created. That this pretty much came from the idea of Byron Howard, that he wanted to make an idea of, just an animated film with talking animals, considering that it has been so long since it ever happened. I mean, technically, you can argue the last time would be The Princess and the Frog, but that actually had human characters. But I mean, like, an animated film completely with just talking animals. The last time that it ever occurred was probably, the last time was actually Chicken Little, but screw that movie, that doesn't count. The last one that was actually good was The Great Mouse Detective. So yeah, it has been quite a while, and Byron Howard wanted to make a movie. He pitched it to John Lasseter, and he said yes, so originally they thought up of this entire spy movie, and then it evolved from there, including bringing in Rich Moore as a co-director, and then, like, the rest is pretty much history. On top of getting, we've seen a lot of behind-the-scenes story, if you have seen Fusion's Imagine Zootopia, about the development of the movie and how it was ultimately crafted and all that kind of stuff. We've already established a story about where Zootopia came from. And pretty much, here's this writer, decided to go and try to steal the fame and glory of Byron Howard and some of the other people working at Disney, saying that, oh no, Zootopia was all my idea. It belongs only to me, and I should get all the riches. So yeah, it also makes him look pretty selfish as well. Like, he wants to steal all the fame and glory from the others. So yeah, like, already, just by doing this, Gary Goldman is in a very bad position where it kind of makes him look like freaking scum that just wants to really capitalize on the glory, on like the success of Zootopia, trying to say that it was all his idea and his idea alone, and screw everybody working at Disney. Pretty much just trying to say that, you know, he's already in a bad position. But rather, if he is saying the truth or not, that maybe Disney did steal the idea, there is one thing that I would like to give advice to Gary Goldman about this entire case. Dude, just give up. Like, don't even try to freaking sue Disney. Just drop the case, move on, you know, just work on your projects. It doesn't matter, okay? Like, just don't do it. And the reason why I say it is that, yeah, even if Disney would continuously steal ideas from others. Like, do you know how many times that Disney got away with it? As much as Disney allegedly stole ideas. Like, they got some of the best lawyers in the world. Do you honestly think you're going to win this case against frickin' them? I mean, granted, in here, Gary Goldman did bring up a lot of strong evidence that he did thought up of this idea first, that he thought up of the story, he thought up of the lines, he thought up of the title, and all that kind of stuff. Like, he did bring in stronger evidence than many other people, but other than that, trust me, Disney has very powerful, and they have some of the best lawyers that money can buy. There is no way that you would be capable of bringing them. I am 99% sure that this entire case is just going to end up with Disney winning, Disney getting the plea of not guilty from the jury. That this is pretty much Zootopia's, Zootopia is actually Disney's idea. And people are not going to care. I could definitely see in the future that people are still going to give credit to Byron Howard and Rich Moore for the idea of Zootopia, not Gary Goldman. Like, honestly, the dude is just wasting his time entirely, and he's fighting against forces that are completely against his, like, that are definitely stronger than what could possibly seem. Like, honestly, he's just being ignorant and possibly naive, thinking that, oh, I'm going to go in and thinking, like, I'm going to get my justice to go and say that I am the original creator of Zootopia and all that kind of stuff. And I mean, this is literally an animation. This is just a tale as old as time where people are accusing each other of stealing ideas and stuff like that. And this is not Disney's first rodeo. I mean, every time Disney has a huge success release, there's always at least that one person that wants to sue Disney for claiming that they stole their idea. I mean, even with Frozen, Disney had to go through several lawsuits from a bunch of idiots saying that, oh, this is Frozen is actually my idea. And like, they think they could get away with it. But no, that's not actually the case. So, yeah, that's honestly my best advice that I can give to Gary Goldman. It's just, honestly, give up. You're not going to win against frickin' Disney on this. The jury is going to go to the big corporation than, like, some small writer, you know? But, that you know, that's kind of Hollywood for you. Like, sure, like, stealing ideas kind of happen. And I'm sure that even some of the greatest movies secretly came from stolen ideas from others. So honestly, just move on, dude. You're not gonna win the case, and this whole thing is just making you look bad. Okay, just leave Zootopia as a Disney thing and move on with your projects, because honestly, you're making yourself looking, you make yourself look like an idiot just by trying to sue Disney and trying to steal their glory of the creation of Zootopia. Really, man, just give up, man. Just move on from it. But anyways, that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can find more of my work at film-work.com. All you have to do is search for Mathieu Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can also find me on Twitter at animat505. And if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go out there and rate and review this episode. You would be a very awesome person if you do so. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then hit that little like button on our video and leave us a little comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation. Thank you guys so much for listening. And until next week, I'll see you later, dude.